Hey folks, welcome to another episode of Nonproductive. Today's episode is ripped from the headlines like only we in a million hot takes can. We're talking about statues. I'm not actually 100% sure on why people are so concerned about statues lately. Wink, wink. But we here at Nonpro want to offer this valuable public service of campaigning for statues for folks that we think are deserving of idolization. I think there's a lot of options here. We have all of American history to pick from, more or less. I mean, no Backstreet Boys. We have to wait until the person has passed. I think that should be a rule, right? We can't idolize people who haven't passed yet.
As a strict Quaker, I don't think we should be idolizing anyone. Mm-hmm. Idolatry is wrong.
This has been a very weird week for you, Pete. You've become a Quaker, I see.
Oh, not really. I just say things. No, I don't even think Quakers believe that.
Well, I don't think we should show any form of respect for people who are living. I think that's a general rule of thought in America.
That's agreed.
All right.
Don't respect them.
Al, I think we should also make sure that the person is an American. I know that you are rabidly anti-American in general, but this time let's focus on the U.S. of A.
Okay.
And right. I'd also say, Al, the person needs to have existed outside of a video game at some point in their
existence. Yes, a real person would be helpful. That probably would have been a better thing to point out.
I guess they couldn't technically pass away at that point. They would just fade away, right? They would just like be obscured from memory. So yeah, I guess it makes sense.
I don't know. My guys have died a lot in video games.
Mm. Yes, your guys. I'm Frank.
Fortunately, I had another guy.
We didn't mention that at any point. So yeah. All right, let's try this. Let's give our best attempt at an American who deserves a statue, who does not currently have one, and why? Who would like to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
All right. I think a person that absolutely deserves a statue in the same way that like Walt Disney has a statue at Disney World, or Disneyland rather, is Friz Freleng, who was one of the people that originally helped put Disney on the map, helped with making Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, which I know barely anyone remembers.
It was like a rabbit version of Mickey Mouse, right?
Essentially, yes.
Or was it the other way around?
Oh, debatable, yeah. But besides that, his real career was in Warner Brothers, and while he may not have invented like characters like Bugs Bunny or Daffy Duck, he helped to reinvent them. He characterized Speedy Gonzales, invented Yosemite Sam, did like a lot of amazing work over at Warner Brothers. And while he was an animator and a director, he also composed a lot of the music that went with all of the merry melodies and stuff like that. And it was just amazing to look at this guy's career, because eventually he wound up forming a company with his boss, Dave DePatie, to make DePatie Freleng Enterprises.
I remember those cartoons.
Yes.
Those very weird cartoons that were like, what are these? Like, these are something.
He made
what?
Like the Dr. Seuss cartoons that you would see, like the Grinch is the Cat in the Hat, and they're the Halloween Grinch Night or whatever it was. Oh, they did those.
I didn't even know he did those. I thought all I remember is the Aardvark and the Ant, which I'm not even sure is him.
It might have been.
I think it was. Did he also do what other famous cartoons did
Pink Panther?
Pink Panther. That's
it. Was
it.
Pink Panther.
Yeah.
He created Chester Cheetah.
Okay.
And the
that's not easy.
And the pizza guy from Little Caesars.
Caesar.
No, but yeah. Working in advertising is like definitely a thing that early animators were all into. That's why you get so many cruel, like memorable cereal commercials.
Yeah.
A lot of the people who did like early the Rocky and Bullwinkle stuff were involved in those. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm gonna say Toucan Sam. The Cocoa Puffs.
Cuckoo for Cocoa. Yeah, yeah. Cuckoo Bird.
Yeah. He was definitely a product of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Was he?
Oh, look at the early.
Oh, all right. Yeah. I assume
Cocoa Puffs commercials.
Ward and Company.
I'm trying to think of other things they actually worked on. Was like they did the Planet of the Apes cartoon.
All right. Yeah. Like now you're fishing.
Are we talking about Friz Freleng?
Yeah.
Because we ought to focus on Friz Freleng.
But it's like, I think also it was like the they worked for they supplemented work for Hanna-Barbera, in which he actually did pen some scripts for like Yogi Bear movies.
Oh, interesting.
So
he was like king of the animation subcontractors.
Yeah, it was. Until eventually he left DePatie Freleng Enterprises, but not before they did work on Star Wars, the original 1977 film, where that company was actually responsible for animating the lightsabers in the lightsaber fights.
Oh,
wow. That's really awesome.
That's their fault, huh?
Yeah. You know what kills me is that he doesn't have a statue already. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely shocked. That was actually one of the harder things about this little thought experiment, is finding people who are deserving of statues that didn't already have them, at least like one or two.
That's a good point, because I was sticking with Al's point of entertainment. I actually had a great guy in mind.
Oh, what animator were you going to do?
It wasn't an animator. It was actually an actor.
Okay.
Some people would consider him, many historians consider him, the greatest American actor of the 19th century.
Okay, Keanu Reeves does not have a statue.
19th century.
Oh.
Not 1900s.
Well.
Keanu Reeves, definitely the greatest actor of the 1900s, but not 19th century, which is the 1800s.
Oh, that was confusing me as a kid.
And as I was saying, they also consider him possibly the greatest Hamlet ever.
Really?
Yeah, better than the actual Hamlet, who may or may not have existed.
Well, yeah, you'd have to be. So it's the pig from Animaniacs.
Yes, the pig from Animaniacs. Wait, good. No. No, this is a man. Before I tell you who he is, I will tell you not only was he an accomplished actor, not only did he pioneer naturalistic acting in the United States, but he also was a lifesaver.
Oh.
He saved the life of Abraham Lincoln's son, Robert. At a train station in Jersey City.
I know you said 1800s, but for whatever reason, I was still thinking of Keanu Reeves. And I'm like, Keanu Reeves saved Abraham Lincoln's son. Cool.
And this paragon of American acting, you may or may not recognize the name of Edwin Booth.
Is he related to John Wilkes Booth?
He is the brother of John Wilkes Booth.
Okay.
All right.
And highly ironic that it's the exact date of him saving Lincoln's son's life is not known, but it was either 1864 or 1865. So it would have been just before his brother killed Lincoln.
Oh, my God.
To be fair, they were estranged at the time. They had
I can imagine
a huge falling out.
Over his stance on saving Lincoln's.
Yeah. Edwin spent a lot of his remaining years trying to dig himself out from under the shadow. But it was the Booth family was weird at that time because if there's a modern parallel, it would be like Billy Baldwin shooting the president today.
Oh, all right.
And Edwin was Alec.
Well, Billy Baldwin shooting the president. A few years ago, let's be honest.
Maybe let's not say it's Stephen Baldwin.
We probably shouldn't even be saying shooting the president so much in this podcast.
I only said it once.
Anyway, moving on.
To be clear, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, unless it's like some sort of card game term. I'm not sure.
I want to be absolutely clear that in every possible sense, shooting the president is a bad idea.
All right, all right. Non-productive is putting its foot down.
Yeah, I think we can make a stance on that. But being the brother of someone who did that isn't inherently bad, and I think Edwin Booth deserves a statue, which he has in Gramercy Park, unfortunately, in New York City. Right outside the Players Club, which he founded.
So this wasn't a game, but so far, Al, and you, none.
Yeah, but Al's it was the right idea. I mean,
well, since we're now finally bringing up historical figures, I would like to transition into my smart choice for someone who deserves a statue. That would be Robert Smalls. Robert Smalls, born a slave in 1839, he commandeered and delivered to the Union forces a Confederate battleship, a gunboat called Plantier, which he was a crewman on. So basically, he's born a slave. He is conscripted to the Confederate Army. He commandeers the ship he's on. He delivers it to the Union Army. He then gets his own ship, comes back, frees more slaves, and eventually, you know, fights for the Union, and eventually, I think, buys the home he was a slave in, and becomes a congressman, serving, I think, 9 years in Congress.
That's like a serious, like, unacceptance of your lot in life to, like, go back and, like, no, I'm going to go that, you know, that house I was born in that wasn't mine? I'm going to go back and buy that, and I'm going to live in it because it's mine now.
It is amazing.
Not only that, but this is going to be my country because I'm going to go and I'm going to become part of politics.
I can't believe there isn't a movie or movies starring this man or about this man. Hopefully not starring Robert Downey Jr. I don't know. The word Robert just went to my head. And again, there's...
You meant Morton Downey.
Yes.
No, didn't.
That's a deep cut. I'm sorry. I don't know. If you got that reference, subscribe to our podcast. So basically not a statue of this man.
Huh. Basically. What do you mean basically?
A bust. Does it count as a statue? A bust?
Not really. No. There's.
I don't know how we do half a ding. I think you only get half a ding.
He
for got that
a. He does have a bust. It was ridiculously late in the day. I think it was maybe less than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
No. Oh wait. No, I'm wrong. It was 1976. So yeah, a while ago.
Well,
how are you going to find a senator who doesn't have a statue? That seems
that's hard.
No,
and he doesn't have a statue. Just has a bust.
I think it's a little iffy, but I will say it's head and shoulders above the one that I said.
Yeah. Oh God. Why do we do this to ourselves?
That was a bust.
So
joke.
I don't know. I get a little point for that, right?
It was, yeah, yeah, you got to have a point. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay,
I can't
well,
believe Al's winning this with Friz Freleng, who I admit I love Friz. Yes.
Okay, I'm going back now to the Civil War again. Civil War is known as America's Statue Factory. I believe that was the primary reason we fought the Civil War, so that statue makers would have something to do for the next 200 years.
There you go.
The person that I have chosen, according to all the research I have done, has no statue. But this guy doesn't appear in anything. The closest he comes to any kind of immortalization is just his tombstone in Arlington National Cemetery, as a matter of fact. And this is a gentleman by the name of Major Jonathan Letterman. And it's not surprising if you don't know his name. He didn't get a lot of fame, but he deserved it because he did become known as the father of battlefield medicine. And for those of you who don't know, back during the Civil War and before, medicine on the battlefield was completely haphazard.
I'm assuming you just meant like, oh, you got it's shot like, with a bullet, I better cut your leg off.
Not even that. Oh. Like, we're talking about one of the big problems that he went to tackle was if there was a big battle and you got shot, maybe somebody around you who wasn't fighting at that time would be able to grab you and drag you off the battlefield and get you some help. But if there was a big battle and nobody found you, you might be lying there for 2 weeks before your probably at that point body was taken off the field.
Wow.
Like it was a problem.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Lots of people were dying that didn't need to be. But Major Letterman actually, he instituted the first ambulance corps in any army, and he established a basic pattern of triage that is still used today in not only the United States Army, but armies around the world. He established the system of having a station on the field to provide essentially first aid, and then a larger hospital just off the, like a temporary encampment just off the battlefield where you could be taken to for, more acute care.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally a large hospital away from the battlefield where long-term care could be carried out.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, and apparently nobody thought of this before.
Like, and that also, that's very strange to think, like from that alone, like, no one would think of this. No one would believe, like, oh, man, we really should, like, get the wounded or something. Like,
yeah.
That was never a thought that someone had. Like the idea that medics hadn't existed until that time is crazy.
You had the medics, but you would be lucky if you got to them. Yeah. So,
I said video game parties were awful. That was my...
Thank you.
No one got to be...
No one healed.
Mercy. No one was mercy.
Yeah, there was no mercy in the Civil War.
Nah.
Read up on the Civil War, man. No mercy.
This is like talking to your grandpa right now, kids.
No Quartermain asked, Quartermain given.
This is little kid Al talking to Grandpa Pete. About
no Alan Quartermain? Is that
I don't know what
about?
Just happened there.
I don't know what you're talking
about. Went back to, they've reversed roles.
So that's it. Major Jonathan Letterman deserves a statue.
Yeah, I think that's a full point. I can't believe...
Thank you.
He does not have a statue. All right.
I agree.
Yep.
All right. So we've got it down to Friz Freleng and Major Jonathan
Letterman.
Very cool. All right. I actually also have one that isn't stupid.
Oh, good.
All right. Let me paint you a picture of the Civil War.
I'm having a hard time picturing anything civil about it.
All right. So during the period of there was a period of the offensive called the scorched earth policy, right?
Mm.
And at this time, when the Union was moving towards the South, the instructions were to burn up the resources that they had come across in an attempt to cut off supply lines to the Confederate Army.
If you've heard of Sherman's March to the Sea, this was that, but it also happened going out west, too.
Right. So a lot of colleges were also the targets of this policy, and which is not too unusual because a lot of the colleges at the time were also military academies or were founded off of military academies. So it makes sense, actually, where the student bodies themselves were up in arms against the Union, and they were fighting on the front lines just like any other Confederate soldier. Now, my story is actually not about, not necessarily about the Union Army or of a Confederate soldier, but of a few weird people who have interplayed in a particular story at the University of Alabama. Specifically, my statue belongs to a librarian from the University of Alabama. So, during this phase of the war, the Union was getting ever closer and burning up property and scattering the Confederate soldiers that they had come across. And eventually they had run across the University of Alabama. And as part of the University of Alabama was the Rotunda. And in the Rotunda was the library. Okay. This was a major building for the university. It had historical significance and cultural significance because there were a lot of books in the library that where there were very few editions. So there were some rare books, there's some unique books in this library. So waiting for the Union Army in front of the University of Alabama were two faculty members. So university librarian and professor of French and Spanish, Andre Delofre, as well as Dr. William S. Wyman. He was a professor of Latin and Greek. They're literally waiting to face the Union Army. And the librarian and the professor approached Colonel Johnson and said, please spare the library. And Colonel Johnson agreed. Colonel Johnson agreed. He said it would be senseless destruction to burn down one of the finest libraries in the South, but he would have to get permission from his general. So he sent out a message to General Croxton and asking for permission to spare the building, and specifically that one building that maybe had very questionable military value, if at all.
Yeah.
And while we don't have any records of what the communication between the two were, eventually the response came back. The orders were basically to leave no public building standing. Colonel Johnson was instructed to burn the library down. There's a lot of myth and conjecture of what happened at this point, and this is why the statue is probably best represented as statues, because at some point, Colonel Johnson, lamenting the destruction of such a fine library, decided to salvage one volume as a memento. There's question about how he talked to the librarian, Delofre, and discussed which book it should be, but eventually they came to a consensus, and they did save one incredibly rare manuscript from the University of Alabama in the middle of what was almost certainly the most bloody moment in American history. And that book they saved was a copy of the Quran.
Wow.
Yes. In the middle of the Civil War, two men from these two warring sides decided they would put their efforts together, find one piece of common ground, and do whatever it took, including breaking your orders, to save one important text that had nothing to do with either of their cultures. And that is phenomenal to me. That's such an unusual moment in time. And it perfectly displays to me what makes America great. It's not just did something good to protect their own people or did something good within the realm that they've chosen to work in, whether it be a doctor or an animator or anything else. This is the two of them working to preserve something that certainly had some sort of significance to them. One was a librarian and one is, you know, it was apparently a well-cultured person who didn't want to be responsible for a monstrous act, but had no choice but to follow orders. And working together, they managed to save this one thing that had nothing to do with either of them directly. That, I think, is worthy of a statue, if anything is.
I absolutely agree with that. It's just, it's so rare that we get moments like that. And then, like, it's worth remembering them.
Definitely deserve it.
So
for you, Frank.
All right. So we've tabulated our votes, and we've determined that the correct answer is the statue that needs to be built immediately and put on
non-pro grounds.
On non-pro grounds is Vladimir Putin. That doesn't sound right. No.
We're going to have to set up a commission to study that vote, Frank.
I don't think we could afford it, but there's something off.
Well, I'll get work on the base at least.
I guess. All right. Well, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Potentially forever.
That's a good done, yeah.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.